Today's Shir in the Daf Yomi is the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Ayin Zayin. And we begin the Shir today, five lines from the top of the words, Omar Abaya. Let's just remind ourselves yesterday, because Abaya is going to be questioning Rava's Shita. So what was Rava's Shita? So we go back to the third line from the top, Rava L'taymei. Rava in yesterday's Shir explained the Mishnah when it said, when you go out with a certain amount of wine, how much wine is that? So we said it was a quarter of a revius. And Rava L'taymei, Rava said when you went out with the raw wine on Shabbos, that's considered choshev, because the Avam Rava, Rava's Shita is, Kol Chamer de Lodore Alchad Plus Maya. Any wine, the raw wine that they had in those days, needed to be diluted in order to be drunk. If you didn't dilute it in a 3-to-1 ratio, Lav Chamer, that didn't come out to be good wine. So the shear in the Mishnah was not a revius of wine, but it was a quarter, a revius of this very raw, undiluted wine. That was considered a chashuv amount, because you would dilute it with three additional parts of water, so you'd add 3/4 of a revius to it, and that made up the shear of a revius, and therefore that was considered chashuv. That was Rav Ashit from yesterday, and now we begin Amar Abaye, five lines from the top, Ayin Zayin Amud Aleph, Shtei Tshuvas Badover. I have two reasons, Rashi explains, Delo Motzi Lemelaf Mimas Nisan. Rav Ashita, which he's not arguing with Rav Ashita that our Mishnah is talking about a quarter of a revius of wine, of the raw diluted wine, but he's arguing that you can't learn from a Mishnah that is the shear for a koshel bracha. In yesterday's shear, we also brought down that the shear of a koshel bracha is a revius of wine, and he learned it from our Mishnah, that our Mishnah says that a quarter of a quarter is the amount of raw wine, and you dilute it with 3/4 more to make up the full revius. So Abaye is saying two reasons why you can't learn that out from a Mishnah. Number one, chada ditnan. We learned in a Mishnah in Nida. Now that Mishnah Nida is talking about there are different colors that are considered blood in regards to Tumas Nida. So there are 4 colors of red, and then there was a 5th color of red, which was black, that the Mishnah spoke about. And it told us there what are the appearances of this red, how much deep the red had to be. Today, by us, we paskin, any red is considered dam nida. But they were able to distinguish between different shades of red to say this is dam tohar and this is dam tome. So the Mishnah Nida and Daf Yutes tells us, v'ha'mozug shnei chilkei mayim v'echod yayin min hayayin hasheruni. One of these shades of red was based upon a certain appearance of sheron wine. Rashi explains that there was a nation, and it was Shemadinahu, Shironi, the Sharon area, and they had wine growing over there, and this wine, if you diluted it in a 1-to-2 ratio, would give you the appearance of this red color that would be in Damnida, would be significant, it would be Tame. But what do you see from here? His first reason why Rav is wrong is Rav said you diluted 3-to-1, and he says here you see that it's 2-to-1 ratio diluting the wine. So that's his first reason that Rav is incorrect, that you can't say that the ratio is 3-to-1. Here you see that the ratio is 2-to-1, and therefore a kosher bracha doesn't have to have a full revius. It could have, theoretically, 2/3 of revius and still be called good wine. Second reason, Ba'od, he says, Mayim bakad umitztarfin. You're telling me over here that you have this shear is based upon the raw wine plus what you would normally add to it, but you haven't added anything to it. The wine's still in the barrel. The wine, we say, Mayim bakad. The wine is in the barrel. The water's in the barrel. Umitztarfin, and it's going to be mitztarfin to make the shear. So Abaye doesn't like the explanation that Rava gave. However, Rava is on solid grounds. Rava says, no, you're wrong, Abaye. Amar le Rava. Rava responds to Abaye and he says, Ha dekamris shnei chalkei mayim, the echod yayim and hayayin ashironi. That which you said, the dilution is a 2-to-1 dilution from the wine from this Sharon area. He says, you're wrong. Yayin hashironi luchud. That is a separate din. The sheron wine is different than all other wine. What makes it different? Because dirafi, it's very weak, and therefore it doesn't require a 3-part dilution to it. It's already weak. It only requires 2 dilutions for each part of wine. So it's a 2-to-1 ratio, not a 3-to-1 ratio. But all other wines are a 3-to-1 ratio, and our Mishnah is talking about regular wine. And even if you don't like that, Inam, if you want to tell me no, that the Sharon wine is regular wine, is no different than any other wine, so then why in the Mishnah Nida did it say the 2-to-1 ratio? That's because it wanted to tell us the appearance of that color. Hasu Mishum Chazuta in Nida wanted to tell us that if you diluted a 2-to-1 ratio, then you'll get this color red that is considered Dam Nida. Well, the taima, but if you're talking about drinking the wine, by tve, then you got to dilute it in a 3-to-1 ratio if you want it to taste good, otherwise it's going to be too strong and it won't be good. I, Udaka Amres, and your second reason or concern with my shita that you said mayim bekad umitzdarfin. How could you have water in the barrel and yet you're counting it? In other words, I'm wrong to say that the shear is based upon how much wine is needed, and when you dilute it with water to make good wine, the water that's being diluting the wine is in the barrel and therefore shouldn't count over here in any way. So he says, no, le'inyan Shabbos, in regards to Shabbos, me de dechoshebinon, the isser for carrying, that's considered a significant amount, that you're going to be chayev on Hilchos Shabbos, is when you carry out a significant amount. So therefore, in terms of Hilchos Shabbos, me de dechoshebinon, you need a significant amount. And this amount of wine, this raw, undiluted wine, is considered choshev, with a quarter of a revius. So the fact that you have to add to it 3/4 of a revius of water, that's irrelevant, because it in and of itself is considered significant. So Rava answers up Abaye with no problem. Gemara says further, Tana, now here we're going to deal about wine that's not in the liquid state, but wine that congeals and is in the solid state. So what is the shear for that? We just said in the Mishnah that the wine in the liquid state is 1/4 of a revius. But in the solid state, what is the shear? So we learn in Abaye, Tana, Yavesh, when wine is in the solid state, it's dehydrated, so then b'chizayis, then the shear is a kizayis. You have to have a whole kizayis worth of wine. Divri Rabbi Nosson. In order for this to be considered significant, that if you carry it out on Shabbos, that you'd be over a chatas, it has to be a kizayis' worth of this congealed wine. Rashi points out that in this situation, you need a kizayis, because meikara havebe revius. It started off as a revius, and now the revius of wine, that's the diluted wine. However, bekorish, with the congealed wine, revius shleim obin, and you need the entire revius is worth to congeal because it's no longer able to be diluted, delav bar meziga. So for the congealed wine, it's not 1/4 of a revius, it's the whole revius that has to congeal. And that will be the size of a kizayis. This is the opinion of Rabbi Nosson. So Rabbi Nosson holds that a revius of wine will congeal into a kizayis of wine. Now, Gemara says, Amr Rav Yosef, Rabbi Nosson, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, Amr Dover Echad. This opinion of Rabbi Nosson is also the same opinion that Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda said elsewhere. Now, where are they both saying the same thing? That a kizayis of congealed wine comes from a revius of liquid wine. So Rabbi Nosson, Hodamar, Rabbi Nosson, we just said it. That's the price that we just brought down. And where do we find Rabbi Yosef Yehuda that he says the same thing? So Gemara says, the Tanya, we have another brisa, and it says over there, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Shisha Dvar Mikule Beishamai Umichum Beishilo. There are 6 things that he says that Beishamai is Wameko de Beishilo. Rashi points out that Lav Dafka, only these 6 things. In Dibra Maskov Yehuda Omer Vav Dvar Mikule Beishamai, he says Lav Deika Hani Vesulo. Not that these are the only 6 and there aren't any more, because Dakati Tuva Ika, because we've learned many others. Ella, on that day, went to the Kerem to Yavne. They idu kolecha v'yechor al oso shebiyado b'meseches idios, and each of them they stated these are the kulas of Beishamai that I'm aware of. So Rabbi Yehuda heyed Rabbi Yehuda al elu. He knew these 6. Knew others. Knew other ones. He stated these 6. Anyway, that's what it means over here. These are the 6 things. We're only interested in one of them, and that is according to Beishamai, we're more meiko than Beisila in regards to dam nevela. Now a nevela is matame. A nevela is matame with a kizayis. But that's when it's in its solid state. In the liquid state, is there dam that is able to become solid, go from the liquid to the solid state, and be metame? So Beishamai says no. Dam nevela, according to Beishamai, the dam of the nevela, Beishamai metarit. Beishamai says it's not an avatoma, and it can't be metame or the mekelim. Rashi points out, he does agree that it has a tumakala to it. It's a rishon, but it's not going to be able to be metame or the mekelim. It can only be metame ochlin umashkin. In any event, Beishamai is matar. He says there is no din of dam when it's in the solid state that it has the same status as basur of nevela. Beisila matame. Beisila says no, it is matame. It's now solid. It has the same status as basur. Basur is matame with a kizayis. So too, dam nevela is a kizayis. And that's what Rav Yosi Rav Yehuda says. Om Rav Yosi Rav Yehuda, ap kishetimo Beisila. When Beisila says that the solid dam can be matame, they said it had to have a kizayis is worth. Lo timu ela bedam. It started off with a revius, and now, that dam revius will become a kizayis, and therefore it is considered significant. So here you clearly see the Rabbi Yosef Yehuda also says that a revius of dam, when it's in the liquid state, will become a kizayis of dam in the solid state. So you see that the opinion of Rabbi Nosson that liquid wine, when it congeals, becomes a kizayis, a revius of liquid becomes a kizayis of wine. So Rav Yosef Yehuda says the same thing by dam, that a revius of dam will congeal and become a kizayis of blood. It becomes solid, so the shear is a kezias. Oh, they both said the same thing. Mar says not so necessarily so. Amar bai, dumalohi, maybe not. It sounds like they're alike, but they actually could be a little bit off. Because ad kan lo kam Rabbi Nosson, ha ha. When Rabbi Nosson said his din, he's talking to the boy Revius that a solid kezias of wine comes from a Revius of liquid wine. Maybe that's only elabiyayin de kolish. Wine is much less viscous. It's much less solid than dam. Dam is a thicker substance. Wine is a thinner substance. It's less viscous. So there, when you start off with a revius of wine, you're going to end up with a kezias of solid wine, congealed wine. Avol bedam desomich, blood is much thicker. So maybe kezias lo bar revius. In order to get a kezias, you don't even need a revius. You need less than a revius of liquid blood, and that will still make a kezias. Let's say you needed two-thirds of a revius of dam, and that will also make a kezias because it's much thicker. Maybe, therefore, he doesn't agree. Likewise, the other way, inami. Ad kan lo kama Rav Yosef Yehuda hasam. The only reason Rav Yosef Yehuda says by dam is because a solid kezias of dam comes from a revius of dam of liquid because it's thicker. The kezias sagil revius. In that situation, a kezias comes from revius. But that's only elabidam de samich. It's only by blood, which is very thick. Maybe, though, avol yayin de kolish, but wine, which is much thinner, it's less viscous, so you need much more than a revius of wine in order to make a kezias of blood. Avol yayin de kolish, kezias have a yose revius. In order to get a kezias, you need to have more than revius. And therefore, v'chimapik pochos mi kezias l'chayiv. And therefore, even if you take out less than a kezias, he would hold that you're going to be chayiv, because it comes, a less than a kezias, is still coming from a revius. So therefore, you can't say for certain over here that Rav Yosef Yehuda and Rav Nosson are both holding the same sheet. Therefore, that is incorrect to assume that they're both saying the same sheet. Mark continues and quotes the Mishnah where it said, Cholov kidei gemiyah. If you carry out cholov, so it's kidei gemiyah. A gemiyah is a mouthful, a swallowful. The Mefarshim say, this is a shear of a grogeris, this dried fig. That's what some of the Mefarshim say. In any event, as an aside, the Rav Avadim Maritanuya on the Mishnah says that the reason why they would carry out this cholov was they would use it for medicinal purposes. He says it's talking about dam from an animal that's tummy, that you don't drink. Otherwise, the shear should be a revius for drinking. But here he says it's a smaller shear because they use the cholov of a non-kosher animal to use as some sort of an eye salve. In any event, the Gemara says, Iboy luhu, kidei gemiyah with an aleph, or kidei gemiyah with an ayin. The aleph and the ayin, we don't really necessarily sound differently. The Sfardim, they have the guttural sound, right? Sodom va'amurah. So the ayin, that's why we call it Sodom and Gomorrah, because the ayin is a guttural sound. It sounds almost like a gimel. So therefore, there's a difference in the pronunciation between an aleph and an ayin. In any event, here the word, the question is, when we say kidei gemiyah in the Mishnah, we had it with an ayin. But could it also be written with an aleph, or is it only written with an ayin? That's what the Gemara is really asking over here. Kidei gemiyah with an aleph, or kidei gemiyah with an ayin? So I'm Rav Nachman of Yitzchak. Rav Nachman Yitzchak says, I'll show you a pasuk that says it can also be with an aleph. The famous pasuk, Chagmiini no ma'at mayim mi kadech. Eliezer says, give me a little bit of water from your jug. When Rivka came to water the camels and to give Eliezer water, so therefore he knew that Rivka was the chosen one for Yitzchak. In any event, it uses the pasuk there, Hagmi'ini na. So it says, with an aleph, the word Hagmi'ini na, which means, give me a little bit to swallow over here. So we see that the word Gemiyah could be with an aleph as well. Ibalu, they ask similarly, we have a whole bunch of other words with the aleph and the ayin. We're not sure which way they're spelled, whether they're spelled with an aleph or with an ayin. So we have the word garinon. We just had this in the last Mishnah, where we talk about the making up the shear that's considered choshev, whether you count the seed or not. So garinin with an olive, or garinin with an ayin. That's the question. So I'm Rav Barula. He says, v'nigra me'erkecha. When you're dealing with an evaluation of a field, so we said that you go and you deduct from it, the nigra me'er kecha. So when you make the evaluation of how much the field is worth, so you take off some based on prorated for each year of the yovel. So the nigra implies over here a lashon of taking away. And the seed takes away from the shear of the entire fruit. So that's the nigra me'er kecha, is with an ayin. So garinin, which is a lashon of nigra, is going to be with an ayin. Next, Ibai Lulei Asin Beis Medrash is the word Omimos with an Aleph or Omimos with an Ayin. And this is talking about a coal which has previously been hot, but now it's been somewhat cooled down, and it's still visibly hot. It's glowing still. And therefore, the question is, when we call that type of a coal, do we say it's Omimos with an Aleph or Omimos with an Ayin? So Amar Yitzhak Avadim, he says, I'll show you the word is with an ayin. Arozim, it talks about the cedar trees, lo amamu began elokim. Even the cedar trees in the Gan Elokim, in Gan Eden, they're not necessarily going to diminish over here, to decrease, to make not glowing the cedar trees of Asher. So therefore, we see that this lashon is with an ayin, to means to decrease. It's still glowing, but it's decreased. It's somewhat extinguished. Okay. Next, Ibai Ludei Asin Beis Medrash, Ma'amtsin, when you close the eyes of a mace, is it with an Aleph or Ma'amtsin with an Ayin? We'll learn later on in the Gemara that when a person, Rechmon al-Islam, dies on Shabbos, so the body is Muktzah, so you're not allowed to close the eyes. So when we deal over there, is it with an Aleph or an Ayin? So, Omer Rabbi Chiya Barabba, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, so he brings down the pasuk from Yeshaya where it says, "Va'otzim einov me'roz b'ra." You should close your eyes and not see all the ra, all the bad things. So therefore, otzim there is with an ayin. Therefore, that's the last of our discussion of an ayin or an aleph in different words. Mark continues and quotes the following brisa: Tana Rabbanan, hamotzi chalav shel behema. If you take the milk out from a behema and carry it on Shabbos, how much do you have to carry in order to be considered Choshev kidei gemia? As we said, enough for a swallow. Cholov shel isha, the milk that you take out from a woman's milk, as opposed to an animal's milk. So what's the significant shear for that? It's the same shear as velovin shel beitza, the white of an egg, when you have a raw egg. So the white is a liquid. So that shear of a mother's milk, of a woman's milk, as well as the shear of carrying out the white part of a raw egg, so the amount that you need is shel kilor. Others have the gear, so just kilor over here. The amount that you need to put into this kilor, which was a certain type of medication that they used to put in the eye, and in order to make it into something that you could smear, the kilor was a solid, you had to liquidize it to a certain extent by putting in either mother's milk, a woman's milk, or you would put in the white of a raw egg, and that amount that's considered significant is the amount that you'd make this kilor to make this certain type of eye medication. And what is the significant amount of kilor? Kilor, kidei lashav b'mayim, the amount that you would normally mix with water, Rashi says, in order to put into the eyes. Rashi says over here, the amount, l'shnei inayim, for both eyes, not just for one eye. Fine. By Rav Ashi says, kidei shifa. When we say over here that you're putting in, to carrying out a significant amount of this kilor, so is it the kilor, the total amount over here, what is going into the eye, or okay, the achiz of yeshiva? How do you put it into the eye? You have to put your finger into it, and you put your finger then into the eye, and most of it comes off, but there's still a little bit left on your finger. So what is the shear over here? Is it with or without the little bit extra that's on your finger? So Gemara says, we don't know. Take that, we'll have to leave till Elio comes and gives us the answer. Then we quote the Mishnah. The Mishnah said, Devash kidei litein alakosis. In the Mishnah, we had that the amount of honey that's significant is smaller than the amount that you would eat, and that was the amount that you would put on a certain wound. Rashi gave two terutzim over there. He said, one, you put it on the wound of either a camel or a donkey, where the loads that they carry would sometimes chafe their back, and they would have some sort of a wound. Or he said it was the wound on your hand or your foot. So this is what they used honey for. Tana, we learned in the Braisa, kidei litein al pi kosis. It's to put it on the mouth over here, the pi, the mouth of this causes of this wound. So imagine a pimple. So the pimple is the entire raised area, and then there's like a mouth on the pimple. That's where you can express sometimes the pus that's inside the pimple. So you have the mouth, and you have the whole pimple. So they ask the following shaila, by Rav Ashi, al causes apuma de kula causes. When we say you put it on the wound, does it mean on the mouth over here, which is the kula causes, the entire raised area? Odilma amursha kamadikosis, or does it mean the point where the pus is expressed, where the pimple is like its opening at the very top, and that's the mouth? Do we say the mouth is the entire raised pimple, or does it really mean just like the point where the pimple has its hole and where it expresses the pus? Lafuke hudrinal delo, as opposed to the rest of the pimple that's not. So therefore, it's a much smaller amount of honey that you need to just put on the point of the pimple, as opposed to the whole pimple. Again, Gemara says, take it. We don't come to an answer over here. Everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created in this world, he created for a purpose. There's nothing in this world that is created for nothing. There's not a single thing that was made for no purpose whatsoever. And now the Gemara is going to give a whole list of things that we might not have known what their purpose is, and the Gemara is going to tell us what their purpose is. So the Gemara starts off and tells us, Rehuda says as follows, Bara Shablul. A Shablul, Rashi tells us, is a certain type of an insect, a limtza, which if you look in the Bach, he tells us, Korin Shanak. And this is usually translated as a slug. And what's the purpose of this creature? You put it on a wound, Lekosis. And you put it on the wound, Rashi says, Menicha Lekosis Olav. You put this insect, this slug, on this wound, and it will make the wound get better. Okay. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu create a zvuv? Bar a zvuv, what's the purpose of flies? Litzira. That's used to go and heal the bite of a hornet. As Rashi says, Lemisha okso tzira. If a hornet bit you, kotes zvuv, you squish a fly, I mean, nicholav, and you put it on the wound, and that will somehow heal it. Next, the Gemara tells us, Yatush, what's the purpose of having a gnat? So that is lenochush. It will go and heal if you get bitten by a snake, so that's what it's good for. You put this gnat on the snake bite, and it will heal you. What's a snake good for? Fenochosh l'chafofis. Rashi explains over here that chafofis is min shchin, it's a certain type of boil, and if you smear the snake on it, we'll see in a moment how you do this, so then that will cure this illness. Samomis, Rashi says this is something called irania. It sounds like an arachnid of some sort, which would be a spider. So this samomis is useful to put in a bite of an akrab. As Rashi says, akita akrab, if a scorpion bites you, koti samomis, you go and squish this spider, and you put it on the wound. Again, we don't do any of these remedies today, but that's what they thought they were useful for, and therefore the Gemara is telling us the idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't make anything in this world that doesn't have a purpose. We all know the famous story, David HaMelech asked, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu create spiders? And then he was hiding in the cave from Shaul HaMelech, and a spider came and miraculously made the web over that part of the cave. When Shaul saw this, he says, there's no way David could have come in here now without breaking this spider's web that must have been here for a long time, and therefore he didn't find David. So David HaMelech realized that HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates everything for a purpose. In any event, the Gemara now has a girsa, if you look in the Bach, where it says, Hechi Ovid. So the Bach in Oz Gimel tells us, before that, you put in the words, V'nochosh l'chafofis Hechi Ovid. How exactly are you supposed to go and take the snake over here and use it to cure the chafofis, the boils? So the Gemara says, Maisi choda akuma, you go take one black snake, the choda chibra, and one white snake, v'shalkilhu, and you cook them together, v'shayfile, and then you smear this cooked black and white snake together on the boil, and that will cure it. Tanur Rabban the Brisa brings down the following. Chamisha emos hein. There are five things that are fears over here of emas cholosh al gibor, that are fears of a stronger person being afraid of something that is weaker than that person. Now, what are they? Emas mafgia alari. Rashi explains that a mafgia is a certain type of chayokitana. It's a small little animal. However, v'kola godol, it shrieks. It lets out a huge cry. V'shomeya, the lion hears this, and the lion thinks, wow, that voice. The yare shetei birya gedola. He says, it must be a huge animal, even much bigger than me. Ubariach, and the lion runs away. That's Rashi's pshat. There's a very interesting shot from the Ben Yoyada who says that the mafgia actually was a vicious, albeit small, creature. And it was so fast, it was able to jump on the top of the lion, and it had very, very strong claws, and was able to pierce the cranium of the lion and kill the lion before the lion could kill it. So the lion, while it's much bigger than this mafgia, is afraid of the mafgia. That's number one, the five over here. Emas yatush al hapil. So Rashi tells us over here that the yatush, this little gnat over here, goes into the trunk, nichnas lapil b'chotmo, into the nose, into the trunk of the elephant, and it bothers it tremendously because it can't get it out. So the elephant's afraid of this little gnat. Likewise, emas simomis alak akrov, the spider is something scary to the scorpion. Rashi says the same thing. V'chein samomis li akrov, nichnas lo biosno. It gets into the ear of the scorpion and it can't get this spider out, so it's terrified of this small spider. Finally, emas sinunis ala nesher. Sinunis, Rashi tells us, is a certain type of a bird that nichneses tachas kanfe hanesher. It gets underneath the wings of the eagle. Uma'akvo, and by being there, it prevents it miprishas knofav. It can't extend its wings and fly. So the eagle, the mighty eagle, is afraid of this little bird. And the fifth one is emas kilbis. That's the girsu that we have. Others have the girsu over here that is kilchis, and that is a certain type of very small fish that is even able to terrorize the huge luvioson. Emas kilbis al luvioson. Rashi tells us over here as well, this is a sheretz katan, a type of small fish, v'nichnas l'dag godol ba'ozdo, and it somehow gets inside the luvioson through its ears, others say through its nose, through its gills, however it gets in there and causes a tremendous problem. So this would be the example, I would say, would be somehow this little kilbis gets into the snout, the blowhole of a whale. So this would cause it a lot of trouble. It would plug it up. It wouldn't be able to breathe. So therefore, the leviathan is very scared of this little fish, the kilbis. Mara says, I'm Rabbi Yehuda Amarav, Mikra. How do we know such a thing, that these large, bigger, stronger animals are afraid of something smaller? So he says it's based upon the pasuk, Hamadliv Shod Al Oz. Rashi explains, Hamachzik Shedud Al HaGibor. He's making the weak, this Shedud, on the stronger one. So therefore, that is the allusion in the pasuk to the idea that a strong, powerful animal is sometimes afraid of something much weaker. Gemara discusses further, Rabbi Zeira, Ashkech Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Zeira one time met up with Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Zeira was a talmid of Rabbi Yehuda, and we have Gemara elsewhere that says he was a little bit afraid to go to Rabbi Yehuda because Rabbi Yehuda didn't want to go to Eretz Yisrael. And Rabbi Zeira wanted to go to Eretz Yisrael, so he would sometimes stay away from Yehuda. So one time, Ashkech Rabbi Yehuda, he once found Rabbi Yehuda, to have a koi apiskel de bechamur. He was in his father-in-law's house. He was on the opening area of his father-in-law's house, and Reb Zeira saw the Reb Yehuda was in a very good mood. V'chazia d'hava b'dicha d'ayte. He saw he was in a very good mood. Very interesting. The Chasam Sofer says that Reb Yehuda was in such a good mood because he was in his father-in-law's house. And there is a Gemara elsewhere that says that there's always a concern with the son-in-law and the mother-in-law, Rachman al-San, to have an inappropriate relationship. And he had zero, absolutely nothing inappropriate in his relationship in his father-in-law's house. And therefore, he was very happy that he was able to surpass this nisayon that the Gemara describes as sometimes a big nisayon. In any event, that's what the Chasam Sofer says, very interesting. And anyway, Rav Zeira saw that Rav Yehuda was in a good mood, and he said, "V'i boi minei kol chaloli alma." If I were to go ask him anything in the world, Rashi explains over here, the chaloli alma is talking pirush dvarim hanasim b'chol chalal ha'olam, things that are hidden away in like the inner passageways of the world. Have Amalei. Now is a good time that Rav Yehuda would tell it to me. Normally he might not be willing to tell him such things, but now he would. So therefore, he started asking him a bunch of things. Now, the Mefarshim go and explain this in much more detail as to being deeper questions. We're going to learn it very superficially. In any event, Amalei, he said to him, "My taima is a masgon bereisha. Why is it that the goats, which we'll see are black, go first, and then v'hadu imri, and then the white sheep come afterwards?" So Amalei, Rav Yehuda says to him, "Kibriyasa shalom, this is the way Hashem Kosh Boch created the world. The Bereisha Chashocha, first he created darkness, by erev, by boker, v'hadu nora, and then he created the morning." So the black goats go first, darkness comes first, and then the white sheep come afterwards. Fine. My taima, he asked him, Rav Zeira asked Rav Yehuda further, "My taima hani michasyon v'hani megalyon, why do the tails of the sheep cover up the erva area, cover up their genital area, and the tails of the goat do not?" So why is that? So Rav Yehuda explained to him, "Hani de mechasinon minayu, since the sheep, we have the wool of the sheep, and they cover us up, so mida keneged mida, so michyason, so they are covered up as well. So it's a nice thing that their erva is covered up. But goats, we don't wear goats here. That's sock. That's not something that is normally a good garment. So in this situation, megayin. So we don't get benefit from it. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't cover up their genital area. Fine. Next question was there. Asked Yehuda, "My taima gamla zutar ginufte. Why does a camel have a very small tail? Doesn't have a large tail." So Rav Yehuda answers, "Mishum da'achal kisi, because it eats kisi. Kisi are like thorns. And on the side it says, pirish, it was BC. And these are pirish asovim sheshvam kotsim biyoser. It wasn't that they eat the thorns, but they eat these grasses, this BC over here, that has thorns in it. And if the animal's tail was long, it would be constantly filled up over here with thorns, and it would disturb the animal. And therefore, Rashi says, kadesh lo yidbeku ba hakotsim. So the kotsim shouldn't bother the animal. Rav Zeira asks another question, "My taima Torah aricho ginufte. What is a shor, a tor, an ox? The shin and the tuff are interchangeable. Why does it have a long tail? What's the purpose for an ox to have a long tail?" So the Gemara says, Rehuda answers him, Mishum the dyer ba'akme, it lives in the swamps, and we know in swamps there are lots of insects. Uboya lekakushe bake, and you're going to go over here and need to use the tail to get rid of these gnats. As Rashi says, lahavriach hayitushin, to go and swat away all these flies and gnats that are around you. Next question of Zeri asks of Yehuda, my timer, karno de kamtzer richicha, why is it that the karen, which literally means the horn, which means the antenna over here of the kamtzer, Rashi says kamtzer is an arbe, a locust, the grasshopper, or alternatively says, v'linira, it appears to me that kamtzer is also a word that we use for numala, an ant. So why does either the ant or the grasshopper over here, the locust, have a soft horn, a soft antenna? So the Gemara says, review the answers, Mishum de Dairei Bechofe, because it lives amongst the Arava, the reeds, the sharp Arava, and if it wasn't for the fact that its horns, its antenna, were soft, Vi Kasha, if the antenna over here were actually to be hard, so then when it's moving about amongst these Aravos, Naja Umis Avra, it would go and move there and it would come off. The reeds would cut off their antenna, and the animal would become blind. The locust or the ant would become blind. And Shmuel says, "Dama Shmuel, hi man, the boy, the lisame lekam. So if you want to go blind this grasshopper or this ant, lishlofinu lekarne, go and take off its horn. Go and take off its antenna. The uses the antenna to locate stuff. It uses some sort of a sonar system, and that's what the antenna is for, and therefore it will be blinded if you take off the antenna. Next question, Rav Zeri asks of Yehuda, my timer, hi timra, the tarnagolta, midle le'ela. How come when we close our eyes, they close from the top to the bottom? And that's the way most animals close their eyes. The eyelid comes down from the top to the bottom. But a rooster, tarnagolta, it closes its eyes from the bottom up. Why is that? Why is it unique? Why is it different than all the other animals? So review the answers, the dairei adafe, because it lives on these boards. Rashi says over here, sha'ole belelos, it goes up at night, ala krushim v'akoros, it goes on these boards, and therefore these beams, and tzorach shi'ala hatachton alelion, and therefore its lower eyelid has to go up to cover up the eye, mipnei ha'ashim, because there's a lot of smoke in those areas against the wood, there's a lot of fire, and shaloi konis be'enov, so the smoke would go in the eye. If you close your eye from the top down, the smoke could still get in, and it would annoy and irritate the eye. But if you close it from the bottom up, so then the smoke won't be able to get into the eye. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu made it so beautiful. Next question Rav Zeri asked to Rav Yehuda is the meaning of certain words. So he asked him, why is a dasha called a dasha? Dasha is a door. So the answer is because derech sham. It's a play on the words derech sham. That's the way into the house. So derech sham. Next, darga. Why is a ladder called a darga? Because derech gag. The darga means you're going up to the roof. Derech gag. So that's why it's called darga. Why is something a dip called maskulisa? As Rashi explains, dover shemitavlinon bo kigon kutach oshar lifton. It is something that you dip. So this is a dip. So why is the dip called maskulisa? So Rav Yehuda answers him, mosai tichle da. It's a play on the words over here. When will this be finished? Rashi has two explanations over here. L'chashi yichle ma nechal. He says, when will we finish off over here eating what we're eating? It means this dip takes a long time to go. You have a bottle of ketchup in your refrigerator, it can last for weeks, last for months. You have a little bit of ketchup each time, as opposed to food. Normally, you eat up the whole food at one time. So that's why it's called maskulisa. When will this be done? Next question of Yehuda asked Rav Zeri. Rav Zeri asked Rav Yehuda, Besa, why is a house called a house? So he says, the house is a play on the words, Bo the Esibah. Besa is Bo the Esibah. Come inside and sit down. That's why it's called a house. Why is a Biksa? Rashi explains a Biksa is a Bayis Tsar, because in a narrow house, a small little house, why is it called Biksa? So he says, Be Akta. So Rashi explains, it means Bayis Tsar. That's why it's called Biksa, Be Aksa. Why is Kufsa called Kufsa? So what is a Kufsa? So Rashi gives three explanations. Number one, Machteshes, it means it's a mortar. So that's explanation number one. Lishnachrina, second explanation is Mido Lechitin. It's a certain measure that they used to measure out wheat. And then Rashi says his preferred pshat is Velinira. I think it's Kemo Golem Eitz Asui Liyeshiva. It's a block of wood that is used for sitting down on. And these are the three possibilities over here. It's something that you can sit on. So why is it called Kufsa? Because Kof Vesiv. turn it over and sit on it. So you turn over the mortar and you sit on it. You turn over this measure of the wheat and you sit on it. You turn over this little box over here, this kufsa, this golem, and you sit on it. Okay. Why are bricks called bricks? Livne. Rizari asks Rehuda, why are they called bricks? Livne. So Rehuda answers, Livne the Ne. As Rashi explains, it's going to last for a long time over here. The Rashi goes to the first of the wide lines. Miskayim Lidoris Harbe. Brick houses, stone houses, can last for a long time. So therefore, it's enduring. That's why it's called Livne Bine. Why is a certain type of fence known as a Hutza called that name? Hutza. So the answer of Zera, chatzitza, because it's just a chatzitza. Rashi says hutza is geder kotzim olulavim. It's a very flimsy type of fence made up of thorns or palm fronds. And he says it's because eino davar kayama. It's a chatzitza because it's just barely serving as some sort of a partition over here. El chatzitza bialma. It's not really a wall. That's why it's called hutza. Finally, why is a certain type of barrel called a chatzpa? Because you use this barrel, shechotziv mayim in anahar. You go and take water from the river, so that's why it's called chatzpa. You're removing, you're mining the water. Chotziv is to literally dig and mine, so you're digging into the river and bringing out the water. Finally, why is a kuza, a little jug, called a kuza? Because it's a little jug, Rashi says. Shkelom ha-dover mu'at v'kal, k'mozeu. And you give it a little bit as a present. It's a small little jug, a kuza. Furthermore, Rosaria asks, Shutisa. Rashi explains this is bachel hod. This is a bunch of myrtle leaves that are used. Shemarakdim bo lifnei kala. So why are they called Shutisa? So Rabbi Yehuda answers, because Shutisa, because you look like an idiot. You look like a fool when you're dancing in front of the kala. That's Nira Kimaraki Kishota. You look like a fool. Person dances with abandon in front of the kala. It's not a negative thing. It's just that you look foolish. Then, why is he said a certain type of washing basin called Mishichla? So, Rabbi Yehuda answers him, Moshe Kula. This is a play on the words that everybody washes from this type of washing basin. Why is something called Mashchilta? Now, Rashi explains, Mashchilta is a smaller basin, a much more beautiful basin, say for cotton vinoya. And why is this one called Mashchilta? Because Masha Kalsa, because only certain people use it. Rashi says, Miyuchad L'choshuvim, only important women use this type of an ornament, type of ornate type of a washing basin. Kimo Kala, or Isha Choshuva, a Kala, or an important woman, they use this to wash with. Why is a mortar called an asisa? A mortar is the part that you have the bowl that you bang, crush stuff up with the pestle. So he says it's called asisa because chasirta, because it's missing something. It's chasir something. It's missing the part of the bowl that was removed so you can bang within it. So it's missing the rest of that section. It's a hollowed out area. Why is the buchna, the pestle, called the buchna? Because bo vakena, you come and bang with this. So this is the mortar and pestle. That's why they're called the mortar and pestle. Then he asks, why is a certain type of garment known as a levusha called the levusha? So, review the answer then, because lo busha. Limnoa habusha, it removes the busha from the person who's wearing this garment. Shemechase kol hachalukim hatachton, because it covers up the undergarments, hakruim v'ron, which could be ripped and torn, and not so nice. So therefore, you wear this outer garment to cover up your embarrassment. Why is glima, a certain type of garment called a glima? Because this is not form-fitting. It's the opposite of form-fitting. It's very loose. And therefore, it covers up your shape, and therefore, it makes you look like you have no shape, like a golem. A golem is a block. So it takes away the shape. That's why it's called a glima. Why is a certain type of garment called a gulsa? So the reason is, review the answers, gale the ase, because when you sit down, you have to lift it up, and therefore you reveal parts of your body when you lift it up. Rashi explains that you don't want to keep it on the ground, because kishu yoshev magalat, so you lift it up and you uncover parts of yourself, shalo yeshev lo, so you shouldn't sit on it, shalo yilach l'chenu, so you should get all dirty on the ground. Shalo yishufenu b'kaka, shouldn't get rubbed on the ground, v'yoshev saro v'yikra v'yivola, and it will tear it, and it will ruin it. So that's why it's called gulsa, because you lift it up, gale ve'esa, then you sit down. Why is a bed called purya, of Zeri asked of Yehuda? So Yehuda responded, sheparin v'ravin olel, because people have relations on that bed, and therefore it's known as the bed that you're parin v'ravin. That's why it's called purya. Next question, why is borzinka, why is a certain pit that doesn't have any water in it called a borzinka? So it, very good, it's a nutrican over here, borzinka. Borzinka means there's no water in it, it's naki, it's cleaned out from water. Why is a certain garment that a Talmud Chacham known to wear called a sudra? Why is that the name for it? So this is a play on the word sod Hashem liyareiv. Sudra means Hashem gives to these people, these Talmidei Chacham, the sodos. He gives them all the secrets. So therefore, sod Hashem liyareiv is implied by this sudra. Finally, why is a palace called an apadna? Because apischadein, this is the way to enter into this place. So apadna is known as apischadein. You come in over here through this entrance. El Pesach Zer, Rashi says, Yovo akol, im lemishpat, im lusharis hamelech. Everybody comes in here either for judgment or to serve the king. Finally, Tana Rabbanon, Shlosha, we conclude this Agadata section with the following brisa that says there are three things, kol zman shemaskinin, even as they get older, mosifin kvura. Normally the way of life is when you get older, you get weaker. But these three animals, as they get older, they actually get stronger. What are these three animals? Ve'elohein, dog, fish, the nachush, the snake, and the chazir, the pig. All of these somehow get stronger as they get older. That concludes that Agadata piece. We'll go weiter. So we said in our Mishnah, the amount of oil that you carry out that's considered chashuv to be chayev achatas and Shabbos is the amount of oil, shemen, kedei losuch ever katan, the amount of oil that you need to go and anoint a small ever. Now, what is this small ever? So Amri the Rav Yane, in the base medrash of Rav Yane, they said, shemen, the amount of oil, kedei losuch, to go and anoint ever katan, shel katan, ben yomo, to anoint the small little limb, one joint of a pinky, let's say, of a child on the day that it's born. A very small amount is considered significant. That's the understanding that they learned in the Beis Medrash of Yana Yada Mishnah. The Gemara is going to question this. Meisvei, it says in another Brisa, seemingly different. It says, Shemen, how much oil is considered significant if you carry it out on Shabbos, Yichai V'chatas? The amount, Kidei Losuch Ever Katan, period, seems to say that the amount that you have to go and anoint an Ever Katan, and then, or, V'katan Ben Yomo, or, to anoint a katan ben yomo. Now, my lab, doesn't this mean over here, the first part was aver katan de gadol, it meant an aver katan of an older person, or the second part, the aver gadol shel katan ben yomo, or a large limb of a child on the day of its birth. In other words, whichever way you want to look at it, it's two statements over here, it's much more than Rav Yane said, the small aver of a katan on the day that it is born. So Gemara says, no, Rav Yane has no problems. I mean, look to Rav Yane. Rav Yane says, you're learning the Brisa wrong. Lo, don't read the Brisa like you read it. Elohachikamah, this is what the Brisa said. Shemen, how much shemen do you have to take out in order to be over carrying on Shabbos, to bring chatas? Kidei losuch ever katan. Shel katan ben yomo. You read it wrong. The Brisa is exactly like my girsa. Gemara says, maybe there's a machlokas over here. Lema ketanoi. Maybe it's actually a machlokas. Because we have another Brisa that says, shemen, how much oil do you have to take out on Shabbos to be over a chatas? It says, kidei losuch ever katan. Vik katan ben yomo, like the girsa that we first brought down, says the amount that you have to do in aver katan, and now is it and vik katan ben yomo, and a katan ben yomo. So this is the opinion, Rabbi Shimon Elazar, which sounds like it's two separate things. And therefore, it's not the shear of a katan's smallest aver. Rav Nosson disagrees. Rav Nosson omer, ki losuch aver katan, to be menasech over here to anoint an aver katan. Now, what is the machlok between Rishim and Lazar and Rav Nosson? My lab al kamifli. Maybe this is what they're arguing about. The Rishim and Lazar saw our Ever Katan Shul Katan. No, it wasn't two statements. It really was one statement. The Ever Katan of a Katan Ben Yomo. Ah, exactly like the Devei Rav Yane learned. And then along comes Rav Nosson. Rav Nosson saw our no Ever Katan de Gadol or Ever Gadol de Katan. And that's the opinion like we brought down from the first Meisvei. And therefore, I will ever cut and shall cut him and yom lo. But he disagrees with the opinion of the Devei Rav Yanai. So let us say this is machlokas tanoim. Gemara says, no, it's not. Lo. The kuliyama ever cut and cut him and yom lo. In fact, everybody doesn't hold like the Devei Rav Yanai. Nobody holds like that. That's not the shear. That's too small of a shear. We turn to the Yom and Aleph. Lamadayin ches Yom and Aleph. V'leisa de Rav Yanai. And nobody holds that the opinion of Rav Yanai is that. Neither of these two tanoim, Rav Shimon Elazar or Rav Nosson, hold like the Devei Rav Yanai. What are they arguing about? This is what Rav Shimon Elazar and Rav Nosson are arguing about. Rav Shimon Elazar savar ever katan de gadol. It means the ever katan of a gadol. The ever gadol de katan, or the large ever of a katan, ben yomo. They're the same shear. That's what he's telling us. But neither of them is the shear of an ever katan of a katan ben yomo. And Rav Nosson savar, no. Ever katan de gadol in. Yeah, the ever katan of a gadol, yes. However, Ever Godol de Katan ben Yomo, lo, but not the Ever Godol de Katan, they're not the same shear. But neither one is saying like the Devei Rav Yanai. How do we paskin? My every law. The Gemara says, what's the answer? What's the halacha? So Toshma, we have another brisa that says, Beferish like the day Rabbi Yanai. Toshma, the Tanya, Rabbi Shimon Elazar Omer, Shemen, when the amount of Shemen that you have to take out to be over Chatas, Kedei Losuch Ever Koton Shol Koton Ben Yomo. So in fact, Rabbi Shimon Elazar's opinion is exactly like the Beis Medrash of Rabbi Yanai, and therefore that is the answer, and it is in fact a small amount. The amount of oil that you need to take out to be over Chatas is the amount that you could do anointing on the little pinky, a little joint of the pinky of a one-day-old baby. With that, we conclude today's shiur.